The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I can groove out to old NFL films music. It's terrific. Man, we have so much to get to, and I'm fired up as usual. There were two fewer games on this NFL Sunday because you had four teams on bye. So it's weird the way the NFL is doing its byes this week, or this year, I should say. They actually skipped a weekend in which nobody took a bye in the middle of the season. And a lot of weeks there's been just two teams out. Well, there were four teams that were resting this week. Plus, we had the final international game in Munich. And according to the commissioner, Roger Goodell, they are working very hard toward getting a game in Berlin. And so they continue to expand. We've seen games in Frankfurt, Munich, obviously multiple places in London. And so to have each of these teams and their fan bases get a chance to be able to play internationally and experience that phenomenon with those crowds. Now, sadly, we keep sending them the worst games. It's a good thing they're gung-ho and enthusiastic, regardless of what they see on the field. Maybe it's because they don't know our American football nearly as well. They just think it's exciting, which I suppose it can be at times. It is the best reality show on TV, so even though we sent them Panthers and Giants, they don't know the difference. And it does go down to the wire after just being god-awful for the Giants for the first, what, three quarters of football. So we'll get to that game coming up. But as you know, every week in the NFL, we've been asking, where is Christian McCaffrey? And when will Christian McCaffrey get back on the field? Today was the day. Welcome back, CMC. And that's where we'll start this hour. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio. Our show Twix is at Amy After Hours. And Ryan and I will get up our Monday MVP poll very soon. There are some good options. Although I don't know about CMC. I'm going to wait until he has one of those breakout games where he goes nutso. In this one, it seemed like he wanted to be on the field for every snap, right? You could see him get a little annoyed when they had him sit out a play or two. He had 13 carries for 39 yards, half dozen catches for 68 yards, and instantly provides that extra energy and power and explosiveness. Even though he's got to get his sea legs back under him, his teammates did indicate how great it was to have him back in the locker room, in practice, on the field, just because of the potential there in the second half of the season. I actually did an interview on our Toronto affiliate, AM 590. That was Saturday morning because I didn't have to be on video. During the week, they wanted me to do interviews and asked me to be on video. Nah. When I wake up in the afternoon, I have zero desire to be on video. Anyway, this was a simple phone call interview, and it was terrific. Mike Gentile, thanks so much for inviting me. He asked me about teams that I felt like could still be contenders in the second half of the season. In fact, other contenders to go along with Chiefs and Lions, because right now those are your two best teams in the NFL. And I did highlight the Niners for a couple of reasons. One, we knew they were getting Christian McCaffrey back on the field. They had Juwan Jennings back. Debo Samuel is healthy. I know they've lost Brandon Ayuk, but I do believe that with the wide open nature of the NFC West, not to disparage Arizona, but that division is still very winnable for any of those teams, actually, except maybe the Seahawks, but mathematically they're still part of it. So I wonder what kind of a bump they're going to get now that they've got Christian McCaffrey on the field again. But with our apologies to Christian, not every great moment in this game belonged to Christian. In fact, I hope you saw it, but if not, you need to go back and check it out. Ricky Pearsall, the rookie wide receiver, catches his first touchdown as a member of the Niners. Now, you know his story. This is his third game back after he recovered from being shot in the chest in August. So he was back on the field. It was about not even 2 months after he was shot, and they'd been targeting him. He and Brock Purdy are working on that connection. But in the first quarter, he gets a ball in traffic and goes 46 yards to pay dirt. And yeah, what a moment for him and the Niners.
I think it was a drive before that. We had a similar route. I had an in-breaker. And it was a pass breakup on that one. It was a little behind me in the same spot. And the DB broke it up. So we definitely wanted to get that one back. So we kind of, I had a similar route to that. Me personally, I wanted to get it back. And so on that one, you know, we connected on that. And then after that, it was just, you know, make a play with the ball in my hands. Get in the end zone, get my first tub. So that was the mindset on that.
Get my first tud. That's what the cool kids say, Ryan. Did you know
Nobody
that?
Nobody says that.
Nobody says that? Well, he does.
Tud?
He caught it.
I
thought it was a neat moment in Tampa. Now, this was the Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady game. Tom Brady doesn't have to travel for this one because he lives in Tampa. But I thought it was a cool moment that they showed on the Fox broadcast where the ball was safely secured. They had a piece of white medical tape on it and writing on it with a Sharpie and showing it to the camera. This is Ricky Pearsall's first touchdown as a member of the Niners, first NFL score, but means a lot more than just a tud. A tud.
Just a tud.
Just a tud. It's just a tud. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. All right, so the Niners were up 10-3 at the half. Tampa barely had 100 yards in the first half, so this was not a banner day. And remember, the Bucs are trying to get out of a losing hole right now. They're in a funk. They'd lost three in a row coming into this one and are trying to figure out against the Niners how to get the job done. And then they lose their great left tackle, Tristan Wirfs. He's out with a knee injury the rest of this game, so the challenge becomes infinitely harder. Though it certainly helps when your opponent muffs a punt to start the second half. So that's what San Francisco does. It's a short field for Tampa, and Baker Mayfield is able to find Rashad White 4 plays later for a 9-yard touchdown catch. And then early in the fourth quarter, again, we see signs of this, where Tampa is able to march over 5 minutes. They get the go-ahead score on a Bucky Irving 12-yard touchdown run. He's been terrific this year. Don't quote me on this, but I think that might be his 8th touchdown. But he's doing wonders for their run game where they really needed that. And then they brought in Rashad White again. So those two guys are both able to get into the end zone. And it's Irving that puts them in front 17-13. But the Niners aren't done. And here's where I feel like their offense has a little bit more life because they've got more options and more playmakers.
Purdy, quick snap, looks right. Purdy, time. Purdy pushed out to his right now. Can I still keep the ball and roll to his left? Vita Vea chasing him, gets his shoulders around, throws to the back of the end zone. Caught by George Kittle. Touchdown! San Francisco!
The call there with Greg Papa on Niners radio. So yeah, George Kittle not only does the ball pop up in the air off of his hands, but he's able to haul it in, and there's a defender in the area, a defender lurking. So then the lead changes hands again with that TD grab, and it actually could have been more at this point. So here's something that I think is significant for the Niners, and it turns into a bit of a brouhaha on the sidelines in the emotion of all of this. This lead could have been larger at this point in the fourth quarter had they not had a pair of missed field goals by Jake Moody in the second half. Now, Moody himself was coming back off of an ankle sprain, and so he's out there for the first time in a while. They released their other kickers because they believe in Jake. They feel like Jake is the way forward. This is the way. But he misses a couple of field goals there in the second half. So Tampa is able to march the field and get the tying field goal with 41 seconds to go. All right. 41 seconds to go. And they, for the Niners, they've got an opportunity, but it would mean relying on their kicker. And in case you missed it, after, so Moody missed one in the first half and then missed two in the second half. So three total. After he missed the third one, Deebo Samuel was all up in his grill and is yapping at the kicker. Generally, these guys don't get in the kicker's face, especially after a miss, considering the fact that everybody kind of screws up. Nobody's perfect in a game. But yeah, Deebo, what'd you say to your kicker?
Normally, I don't even get like that, but just like frustrated in the heat of battle, you know, really close game. And, you know, I kind of got out of character a little bit, but, you know, I'll talk to Moody and, you know, we'll get past it. At first, like, I wasn't saying nothing like crazy to him. I was just, you know, kind of frustrated in the time. But, you know, he went out there and won the game, of course, and, you know, he wasn't bothered by it. So, you know, we moved past it.
I mean, when was the last time you heard of a receiver getting in a kicker's face? But he did, and I guess the frustrations, the emotions boiled over. And, yeah, you could see another teammate kind of separating them. But I like what Deebo had to say if you didn't hear him clearly. He says, didn't bother him at all.
Oh, it definitely did.
Yeah.
Because what is a kicker going to do to 6'4 wide receivers?
To Deebo Samuel, right, exactly. Also, as if it's not bad enough that it's your first game in the lineup again and you've missed three field goals, now you've got a wide receiver yapping at you. I could imagine it was a gut check moment after Brock Purdy completes four passes in a row to set up Moody one more time. Oh, no. Oh, no. I almost couldn't watch.
Tabor Pepper will snap to Mitch Wishnowsky. Number four will try to make it here. Good snap. Jake has it away. Jake has the distance. And Jake Moody is good! Money! Moody!
Wow.
Somehow, someway, the Niners win in Tampa Bay.
I had great confidence all week in him. You know, confidence is built off of how guys look during the week, and he looked great in the week. And he made some field goals today, but you know, the one he missed was just a little bit left. Looked like the next one he missed was the exact same kick, a little bit left. Then it looked like he overcompensated for those misses and missed the exact same way a little bit to the right, and fixed that a little bit, and it just went into the right on the last one. So you're only as good as your last kick. So he did a hell of a job winning that game for us at the end.
You're only as good as your last kick. Ouch. That sure sounds like you're dispensable. You're only as good as your last kick, and we certainly know that's the case with kickers, man. Even during the course of the regular season, a bunch of them are changing teams. Now, Jake Moody said his confidence never wavered, but there is no way. You can't be human and stand out there after missing three kicks, and you've got the Deebo effect, Deebo in your face. So he said, my confidence didn't waver, but I wanted a chance to redeem myself. And that I understand. It's a little bit like missing the last free throw before your basketball practice wraps up. I used to go back and say, no, I can't walk away on a miss. Or a three-point shooter who lets the ball fly and it bangs off the rim. It felt good, but it bangs off the rim. They just want one more opportunity to take that shot. Well, here's a kicker who's missed three times in his first game back after a month. And you hear what Kyle Shanahan has to say. He was overcompensating this way and that. So sure, finding his feel again. But as time expires, he nails a 44-yarder. And the Niners escape. But they're now above 500. They're 5-4. And Christian McCaffrey is back. So let's go.
I never go in, you know, expecting anything. It's just if my number's called, I like to be out there. I think when I go back and look at the tape, I'm sure there's going to be some stuff that just getting back into a feel of real game. That's the third time I've had pads on in 8 weeks. So getting back into a groove that was really good for me to do. I think there's a couple things that maybe I didn't feel like myself 100%, but that's normal when you haven't played in a long time. And I'll learn and grow from those and just keep trucking along.
So they end up with 75 yards rushing. One point, they put Jordan Mason in for just a single carry. Same thing with Isaac Garendo. But, man, you were keeping the seat warm for Christian McCaffrey. And then Debo, we know he'll take a few carries as well. You better watch out. The kicker might talk smack the next time he fumbles the ball. Probably would advise against that, don't you think?
Oh, you need three fumbles in one game.
Let's let it die right where it is. Let's not escalate the situation. As for the Bucks, they've dropped four in a row. And, yeah, this one's tough. No interceptions in this game for Baker, so he was a lot better. He did drop the ball a bunch, though. They had a couple of fumbles that they were lucky to recover. But also not capitalizing on opportunities, right? So they play clean football, but they don't get what they need in the red zone. They were just kind of middling all day long and found themselves in a hole, too. So it's hard. I know they don't have Mike Evans. He's not back yet, though. He is expected back for week 12 after their bye. They certainly don't have Chris Godwin. They're trying to balance the run and the pass, but their passing game lacks a little bit of pop right now. And so they've got to weather these storms. And, yeah, we were asking this question earlier in the season about this was referring to championship games. Would you rather get to a championship game and get completely blown out or never have been in the arena at all? And so a similar type of situation where, yeah, the Bucks are coming close. They're just not coming away with the wins.
I mean, they're all bad. They're all bad, whether you lose by 40 or whether you lose at the end in overtime. They're all bad. You want to win ball games any way possible. It's disheartening when we don't execute the things that we know we have to execute to lose those ball games instead of just trying to win it.
Just a matter of wins and losses, and we're still not winning, so still sucks. Got to play to win down there at the end on offense. Trying to balance bleed the clock out so they don't have too much time, but also go win the game. And unfortunately had a negative play down there and set us back a little bit. Just got to make a better throw or win our one-on-one matchups and somehow find a way to win. That's all that matters.
Yeah, feeling like they could have gotten a touchdown instead of that field goal with the 41 seconds to go. And that's the frustrating part. It's maybe not something that shows up on a stat sheet, but they have the ball for 2.5 minutes. They really would have liked to run out the clock and not give it back to the San Francisco 49ers. But once they got inside the red zone, so you had a couple of negative plays once they got inside the red zone. They just couldn't get that forward momentum. But the worst one was on second and goal. The Rashad White tries to go up the middle and he gets shoved backward for -3 yards. And then Baker tries a pass. Also, sitting on the 8-yard line, so you're well within a touchdown there, but is offbeat with his receiver. And that's one of those areas where you think that's a Mike Evans ball. That's a Chris Godwin ball if they have it. And instead, you don't have the veterans, the ones that you've developed that rhythm with. You've got Rakeem Jarrett, not a knock on Rakeem, only that he's been lightly used and was targeted 4 times in this game, including on that potential touchdown. So you really don't have your wide receiver 1 or 2 right now. Kate Otten, he also had a ball go right through his hands on that last drive as well. So it's just about adjusting to the different guys you've got. And of course, every team has to do that because every team deals with injuries. And the Bucs haven't lost any of these games by more than 10 points. In fact, that was just one. They lost one game by 10 points to start the streak against the Ravens. They lost to the Falcons by 5. They lost to the Chiefs in Kansas City by 6. And then they just lost to the Niners by 3. So they're close, but yeah, you heard Todd Bowles say, they all suck. Losses, they all stink. And so for the Buccaneers, now they get a Falcons loss on Sunday so that they don't fall further behind in the NFC South. But we were just talking about the AFC South, right, where the Texans are the only team above 500. It's the exact same situation in the NFC South, where it's the Falcons, who are at 6-4, but no other team in the division is above 500. And think about it. Yeah, the Buccaneers and the Falcons were duking it out for first place a month ago. But since then, the Bucs unable to win. And I believe this is their bye week, so they're expecting Mike Evans to come back after the bye, which will certainly help. Also, I wouldn't worry too much about the Saints and Panthers behind you, but that would be really embarrassing if somehow one of those teams passed you. Speaking of the Saints, we'll get to them. Darren Rizzi taking over as the interim head coach after Dennis Allen gets fired. Derek Carr has a new target who makes a major impact. But straight ahead, you know, the Niners and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl last year, and it's the Chiefs right now who look like they are still the team to beat. Man, they're the toughest out in sports. And you want to talk about finding ways to win like we did with the Lions on Sunday night. The Chiefs sometimes defy logic. And no, it's not the refs. Stop it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
A lineman of the game. That is Matt Kirk lined up as the tight end on the right side. Play fake for Knicks on third and two. Loads it up. He's got a home run ball. It is there. Touchdown, Denver. Cortland Sutton. What a call. What a throw. 32-yard touchdown pass on third down and two. And Sutton beats all-pro Trent McDuffie.
It's time to pull on the pads and hit somebody on After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We had talked about this late last week. Is the Chiefs' preeminence atop the AFC West going to be challenged by LA and Denver this season? Both of those teams sitting on five wins. And if the Chiefs should stumble, and let's be frank about it, they don't blow teams out. We were asking that question last week. Why don't the Chiefs ever blow their opponents out? Well, this week, another example, and I think this week it's pretty obvious because their offense really stunk and continues to be abysmal in the red zone, which is crazy to say about a team that's won 15 in a row. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Denver up 14-3 at Arrowhead in the middle of the second quarter on a pair of touchdown passes by Bo Nix, the rookie with the deep shot to Cortland Sutton. You hear that with Dave Logan on Broncos Radio, a 32-yard score. But then late in the second quarter, it's always Kansas City, I swear. They get a fire lit under their rear ends when they're trailing by double figures. That's the deal. They actually operate better when they're facing an uphill climb or when they ratchet up the degree of difficulty. I'm thinking about the Olympics when you have a dive and you get awarded extra points or you have a higher start value based on your degree of difficulty. Same thing in gymnastics. This is classic Kansas City Chiefs. They have a higher degree of difficulty because it seems like they wait until they're in double figure hole before they play better football. So yeah, late second quarter, they put together a 70-yard march, a touchdown drive that results in something that we've seen pretty frequently over the course of the last decade.
Fourth down, goal to go at the 2-yard line. They're trailing 14-3 are the Chiefs. 2x2 with eligible receivers. P. Ryan shades to the right, far side of the field of Mahomes. Barks had a call. Now they motion to set up three eligible to the right. They throw right top. Touchdown! Kansas City! Travis Kelce just pivots inside and now ties Tony Gonzalez with 76 receiving touchdowns.
Travis Kelce. It was only a matter of time. We forget sometimes that he's chasing one of the greats, a Hall of Famer in Tony Gonzalez. But you hear the call with Mitch Holtis on Chiefs radio. 8 catches for 64 yards for Kelce. He's starting to come on and the touchdown. And so he takes over as the all-time TD leader at his position. And as much as the Chiefs need him and Patrick Mahomes, as well as his coaching staff, to kind of provide some stability for an offense that seems to be ever-changing, they have managed to stay undefeated, even though Kelce didn't do a whole lot early. But now, he and Patrick Mahomes are locked in. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Love to chat with you, to connect with you at A-Law Radio. And then our Facebook page, which I haven't even opened up yet, but I will. It's just been one of those nights. That's usually Sunday night. By the way, on that drive leading up to the Kelce touchdown, Mahomes goes 7 for 7. So it's there. It's always there when they find that rhythm. And the touchdown is on fourth down as well. Apparently, Mahomes convinced Andy Reid to go for it on fourth down as opposed to taking the field goal. So they're trailing 14-10 at the break. But once again, the red zone issues really come back to bite them in the rear. They're just 1 for 4 in the red zone. And this is home against Denver. They settle for a field goal after a 16-play drive in the second half. You want to talk about demoralizing? A 16-play drive? You have 5 snaps in the red zone, and you come away with just 3. That's tough. 7+ minutes with the football. I know it takes time off the clock, but all you have is a measly field goal to show for it. But that Chiefs defense, they're good. In fact, they show up the way that a championship team does. We, again, talked about this with the Lions on Sunday Night Football. You can tell that they are getting better and that they are much closer to being a Super Bowl contender. They've taken these major steps forward because they can rely on their defense and their special teams to win games. Well, that's certainly the case with the Chiefs. It was a scoreless second half for Denver, so they are unable to take advantage of their opportunities. They have 3 different punts before Kansas City has, again, high degree of difficulty late in this game, a 31-yard catch and run by DeAndre Hopkins. So there he is making an impact early, right, his first month with the Kansas City Chiefs. One more time, KC has 6 snaps in the red zone, but still comes away with only a field goal. That's got to be extremely frustrating. This game doesn't need to be close. We asked, why don't the Chiefs blow teams out? Well, this year it's because they are not capitalizing on their opportunities in the red zone. I'll look up the numbers after this weekend. Sometimes they don't update right away on Sunday night. But I dare say the Chiefs are among the worst in the red zone in the NFL this season. So yeah, 11 snaps in the red zone in that second half, and they come away with just a pair of field goals. So Denver takes the ball for the next 6 minutes, sets up their final kick. And this is one of those moments that you have to see to believe. Denver works the clock perfectly, gets in position. All they've got to do is kick a short yarder.
Lutz waiting for the snap. Placement is down. Lutz's kick is blocked! It's blocked! It's blocked! The Chiefs blocked the kick! They're going to stay undefeated! The Kansas City Chiefs blocked a 35-yard field goal attempt. Kansas City wins this game on a blocked field goal.
Leo Chanel, he gets a hand on the football, but actually it wasn't just Chanel. Did you see the red wave of Chiefs? There were probably 5 of them there. And actually Andy Reid said after the game, they had seen something. He didn't elaborate. They'd seen something with the Broncos and the way they kicked that felt like they could take advantage of some space in the middle. And that's the same thing Chanel said post game, is they'd been watching over the course of the game and over the course of seeing tape with the Broncos this year. They felt like there were opportunities, but obviously it's a critical moment. And if you don't get to the ball, well, then you lose.
You know, it's complete shock. You know, it's not much I can say about it. You know, glory to Jesus Christ and everything, because I was really praying for something to happen, because it's so easy to, like, you know, that moment is so heavy. You know there's a second on the clock. They're going to kick the field goal, and, you know, you feel the weight of the moment.
So he's there and gets the ball right in his palm. It's actually toward the base of his palm as they kind of converge on Will Lutz. And it just blows you away, right? If you haven't seen the video, I did retweet it because it's one of those moments from the category of you can't make this stuff up, right? If it's not the Chiefs' offense, it's the defense. When it's not the defense, it's special teams. How in the world do they do it and still are undefeated? I'll retweet it here at A-Law Radio. Fairly disheartening for the Broncos, who are right there on the cusp of taking out the Super Bowl champions. But I guess you could hang your hat on that, except kind of tough. You build that lead and then go scoreless in the second half.
Feel very close at times. Just feel like, we're right there. Just got to get over that hump. But, it's a tough game played by tough people. So, they have a really good football team. And, hats off to them. They just have found ways to win and win over and again.
We knew it was going to be a game that went into the fourth quarter for us to win. Like, in other words, it was important that we got into this type of game. And it really played out exactly, how we wanted it to. Like, exactly. And with the ball, with the clock, with complete control of everything, we just couldn't finish it.
How about that? They had the Chiefs right where they wanted them, and somehow Kansas City still wriggles out of their grasp and snatches victory from the jaws of defeat. But Sean Payton says we executed that final drive. And yeah, it was nearly 6 minutes they possessed the ball. What do you want to do? What's the most effective way to keep the Chiefs offense from beating you? Well, don't give them the ball. This is rule number one when you're talking about Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And it's always been the case for guys like Drew Brees and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, of course. Well, you want to keep Patrick Mahomes from beating you? Don't give him the ball. And so Denver in Kansas City is able to possess the ball for the final 6 minutes and set up what would be a game-winning kick. And it gets blocked. And you may have seen at the end of the game, after the block, Mahomes is, he's flying around the field, arms outstretched like he's Superman, and is so excited about the fact that they get this win to stay unbeaten.
I think more than anything, I was just sick that last drive. I missed that touchdown throw. That would have gave us a chance to make it where they had to score a touchdown, put our defense in a bad situation. And I thought our defense stepped up in that second half and did a great job. And so I was just happy, man. I was happy that we ended with that block and Leo got through there. And it was just joy after that.
Lots of room to improve. We've got a good team that we're going to play this next weekend here. So we've got to get ourselves ready, learn from the mistakes from today, and move on. But I'm proud of our guys for battling. I told you that during training camp that they've got big hearts, and you got a chance to see that today.
Just two games this season in which the Chiefs have won by double figures. Two games. That's it. Both of them double two-score games. So they beat the Saints 26-13. They won in San Francisco 28-18, but that was a pretty close game. Everything else, a one-score win. And a couple of times, 1 point or 2 points. They do not blow teams out because they're still not in rhythm offensively. And yet they've got a franchise record 15 consecutive wins going back to Christmas Day against the Raiders in 2023. All right, we've got a lot to get to still. Darren Rizzi will explain to you why he thought the Saints were headed for another loss and why this was going to be a no good, very bad day for him taking over as the interim head coach. Also, the Eagles and the Cowboys. It was so lopsided. And now what does Dallas do? 855-212-4227. We can take your calls as well at A-Law Radio. And then our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
They're going to go for it. 2 of 4 this season on fourth down, and they're going to go for it from the shotgun. And they're going to go empty. Herbert rolling to the right, and here he goes, Herbert, into the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. On third down, Herbert. Looking, throwing for Quentin. Caught, touchdown! Herbert to Johnston, 16 yards. And Quentin gets in again. Fifth touchdown of the season.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Justin Herbert with a couple of huge plays in this one, scoring with his legs and also scoring with his arm. And you hear, well, helping another guy to score with his arm. You hear the calls there on the Chargers radio network with Matt Smith. Matt Smith on Chargers radio. Got it. Matt, yes, I don't generally use his nickname, but Ryan points out Matt Money Smith. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So LA comes up with points on 3 of its first 4 drives as they're hosting the Titans at SoFi Stadium. And it's that touchdown run by Herbert late in the first half that gives them a lead that they don't have to worry about. Then they go back-to-back touchdowns to start the second half. Quentin Johnston has been such a great weapon for him. Remember, all the weapons, all the playmakers around Herbert changed in the offseason. Guys like Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Austin Eckler, they all changed. And Johnston has stepped into that void and has been a great receiver for Herbert. Also, kind of an interesting story, too, Hassan Haskins, who was out of Michigan, so he played for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. He has his first career rushing touchdown, and it's certainly redemption for him. He missed a lot of time, including all of last season, when he was arrested and charged with domestic violence in an incident. Actually, he and his girlfriend were both charged. I don't remember exactly when, but he was playing for the Titans at the time, so I think it goes back to 22. And then he missed a significant chunk in what could have been the prime of his career, paying for his mistakes, paying for his crime, so to speak. And now he's with the Chargers, and he's able to get into the end zone for his former coach. And also the streak continues. So this was an overwhelming effort for the Chargers against the Titans. They end up winning by 10, but it really didn't feel that close. The LA defense has not allowed more than 20 points to an opponent in any game this season. In all 9 games, and they've won 3 in a row now, they moved to 6-3. This is significant in the AFC and certainly in the AFC West. The Chargers defense is stingy. And so for Brian Callahan, who's got Will Levis back, and there were some moments with Will Levis. It's just a game in which they never really had what they needed to compete with the Chargers.
Didn't compliment each other well enough. We had a chance to we go down an opening kickoff, go down there in scoring position, don't convert a third down. You have to score touchdowns in the red zone in a game like this where we knew the possessions would be limited. We kick a field goal. Got points on the board, kick the ball back off. We get to give up a big return in a plus territory. They punch the ball in and score 7. We get the ball back. I think we get a first down or two, but ultimately end up in a 3rd and long. We had another penalty, false start. Operation wasn't good enough today.
Yeah, they end up with 9 penalty flags, some of them critical. They go 1 for 3 in the red zone. And I do appreciate that Callahan is kind of explaining to you how they're still in the midst of trying to build a winning culture. As for Jim Harbaugh, he understands how to establish his culture. He understands how to get a team turned around really quickly. But it definitely helps when you have a Justin Herbert that he gushes over.
Just I'm changing his name to Beast. He's Beast Herbert.
half man, half beast. He made the two biggest plays of the game. You know, the fourth down touchdown run that he made. I mean, I don't know how many people we blocked, you know, or who actually got a block and who didn't, but there was a lot of unblocked guys, and he just went beast mode and got that ball in the end zone. No quarterback has completed more passes in the first 5 years of an NFL career than Justin Herbert. In the history of the National Football League, that speaks to his greatness. And just to be around it every day is, that's what it feels like. It feels like you're around greatness every single day.
Oh, heavens. I'm rolling my eyes now. But Harbaugh gushes over Herbert. Remember, he said he heard angels singing when he returned to practice during training camp. He loves this dude.
The elevator incident, too. He's like the most poised person I've ever seen.
Honestly, I think as a head coach, going back to his days at San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick was his quarterback for a good portion of the time that he was there. Not his only QB, but this is obviously the best pure QB he's had in his days as an NFL head coach. And the cool thing is, you never have to worry about where you stand with Harbaugh. I mean, he's a big-time optimist, and he always is running interference for his guys, whether positive or negative. But, man, he gushes over Herbert. He's beast mode. I'm just going to call him Beast Herbert. So, yes, the Chargers move to 6-3. They've won three in a row. And this is why the Chiefs have to keep on winning, because it's no longer just them in the AFC West. The Chargers, I mean, they're still three games back, but they are above 500, right there in the conversation for an AFC wild card if they don't win the division. The Broncos, meanwhile, they've dropped back-to-back games to Baltimore and to Kansas City. And so they're back to 5-5. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Gordy is in Detroit. Gordy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Amy.
Hi.
Hey, so I just kind of wanted to get your overall thoughts on the Lions in general. I mean, I'm a fan, so I'll start with that. But coming from on a national perspective, really, is what I wanted to hear. But the way we won tonight, the way the Chiefs won today, and Za'Darius Smith not playing today, the role the Lions have been on, and just kind of, you know, how the outside world perspective sees
outside world.
Of Detroit. And,
I like it.
Yeah, and what our chances are, what you guys feel, you know, coming from somebody outside of Detroit.
Gotcha. Well, I can't speak for every national host. I can only speak for Amy, so I'll speak for Amy.
Sure.
One of the hallmarks of a team that can survive the rigors of not just the regular season, but what is a playoff run, that it's pressure packed, right? One of the hallmarks of that, those types of teams, you mentioned the Chiefs, they have a bazillion different ways they can beat you. For Kansas City, if it's not offense, it's defense. If it's not defense, it's special teams. Well, that's what the Lions did in this game. And so to me, this is a major step forward. I know they've won 7 in a row, and maybe come end of the season, this game doesn't stand out, but it should, because Jared Goff hasn't thrown 5 interceptions since he was the quarterback at Cal. I mean, this is a career high for him. They're in a 16-point hole, and then what do they do after coming out of the second half? They throw 2 more interceptions, right? And so they had to find a way to win. But the defense was terrific in the second half, completely threw the Texans out of any type of rhythm after they looked so fluid in the first half. And then for them to come back with a kicker, right? A kicker who is in his first year and is able to nail a couple of kicks that were critical. Yeah, whether you are a blowing teams out like they've done the last couple of weeks, and they've done way more than the Chiefs don't blow teams out, or whether it's having to win a game like this, to me, this shows how far they've come in terms of building winning culture. And yeah, absolutely, winning on the road, the way that they've been able to survive. I think that they are the best team in the NFC, but also a team that can certainly go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs. The one edge you give Kansas City is the experience, but in games like this, the Lions are getting the experience to withstand the playoffs. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.